Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined by Kyle Devitt, who I don't want to say he's playing hurt, but Kyle, you're putting in a yeoman's effort for us today, bud.
Do my best.
Absolutely. So last week, we had a pretty exciting show, I thought, and certainly over Memorial Day weekend and the MLL break, kind of regathered focus coming off of a week in which there were games, and we're going to start talking about Rochester's 18-11 win over the Florida Launch, which heading into last weekend you said was the game that you were most looking forward to. So I guess, you know, just to, before we kind of dive into the nitty gritty of the results, why is that the case? Number one, and number two, did it meet your expectations?
I thought it'd be great because I thought a lot more rookies would get into the mix. Obviously, Miles Thompson started on attack, but only managed, you know, a goal off of a pretty generous dish from Mark Matthews, who was a surprise start, in and of himself. But, you know, it was not the game that you would expect from Florida's defense, I would say. Rochester's, the 18-11 scoreline was a little misleading because Rochester threw in four goals. They didn't have to, you know, but, you know, that happens when the goalie's out of the cage. I mean, Kevin Lavelle made a veteran play and passed up an easy, easy layup goal. And then he passed it around two passes later. It's a goal. So he was probably yelling at his teammate because he's the one leading the league trying to get to that, MLL all-time goal scoring record.
Yeah, I was going to say that was actually a really interesting play. Kind of had a little bit of a playmaker quality to it that was impressive. And the other thing that I kind of took away from that as well was, you know, he is paired with a couple of goal scorers in Mark Matthews and Miles Thompson, and it was interesting in the way that they actually did find a little bit of chemistry in terms of moving the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we talked to the Florida coach Stan Ross and Sudo, they both were like, well, listen, Ross was like, we're not sliding off of, Matthews or Thompson, like ever. He's like, that was the plan. But, you know, when they started doing that, Rochester was like, okay, well, we're just going to go one-on-one with our middies and destroy you. And that's kind of what happened. That's why you didn't see huge numbers out of those attackmen. I mean, obviously Lavelle was 3-2, but, Matthews missed like two or three layups in front of the cage. It should have been goals.
Is it fair to say Mark Matthews is your favorite player in the league right now?
I don't like players that don't hustle. I like, listen, that's just me being honest. And I think I texted you something about it, but like, I can't stand when guys like don't run after loose balls. That just drives me insane. Absolutely insane. Or like when they mess up a play, they just put their hands up or put their hands over their head or their stick up. Like, hustle, man. Like the perfect example for the antithesis of that kind of player is, he's not playing in this game that we're talking about, but like Tommy Palisak will like miss the ball and like run after it. Like he knows he missed the shot and he's already running. You know, that's what you should be doing if you're an attackman, not like sulking because you missed or like being upset. Like be upset when the ball's on the other side of the field. You know, that's why you play attack. You're there to score goals and occasionally screw up and make up for it later. You know?
Sure thing. And I guess one of the ways to frame this game is how do you compare the surprising offensive output that Rochester distributed or exhibited to how much I thought Florida struggled offensively?
I think when Manley got put on Powell and Powell, it was pretty obvious that Powell wasn't going to get around him the way he's been getting around other guys. Like Rochester went into the game like, okay, Casey's the whole kit and caboodle. He's the reason they run. He's the engine. Let's just shut him down and see what happens. And that's what they did. I mean, Manley was in his back pocket the entire game. And actually halfway through the game, I was like, Manley wins defensive player of the week. Lock it in. And then he did, you know, cause he did do a great job. Barely let Powell touch the ball, you know, and I've said this in the last, I think column 2 weeks ago, like Powell was drawing the second and third pole down there at attack for the launch. I mean, McArdle wasn't doing anything to get free, not getting good looks at all. And then Florida would just go one-on-one mode, and Rochester's one-on-one versus Florida's one-on-one in the 6-on-6 offense. Rochester's one-on-one wins 1,000 times out of 1,000. You know, they have dynamic play it. Lawson and Turi can dodge from anywhere. Rannigan is a great, one of the best, probably the best sweeping shooting midfielder in the league. And that's what they did. They just tore them apart with those guys. And the launch D-mids were just like left on an island. And Queener didn't have a great game. He just didn't have a great game. And Ross basically said that on the call. It's like, listen, sometimes guys have off days. And Queener had an off day, and he definitely did.
Did Chris Mattis have an off day?
Oh yeah, that too. That's not good. That was rough. I actually asked a question about that, and Stan Ross was not too pleased with my question. So I think, you know, they're gonna stick with that. And they made a weird trade. They traded Noble to Chesapeake in the middle of the week. You'd think teams would learn not to trade with Chesapeake at this point, but you know, I thought Noble played well when he played, but I don't know. I don't know what he's doing. That's just probably a location move.
What'd they get in return?
Third round pick in the next draft in 2015. So not a horrible, like, it's a good trade, I guess, for both teams. It's not awful, but, you know, that's Chesapeake's dealt for all those midfielders, and now they're scrambling because all their poles are old and hurt. And actually everyone on the team's hurt, but that's where they needed the most help, and that's what they're doing.
Jason Noble is worth more than a third-round pick.
I would say so. I think that...
Especially to this Chesapeake team, obviously, which obviously it addresses a need, but then in addition to that, I would say that, it's not just a need in terms of defensive players. It's a need in terms of, like, fit with respect to athletic, fast defensive players. I think he's going to be a good guy. I think he's going to be a good player. He's a pro lacrosse player. He plays all year round.
Yeah, he is. I mean, I know someone at Cornell that knew him, said he was like really cool, but he's not as big as he's listed on any sheet that he's been on.
Which has been a staple of Dave Cottle's, I guess, kind of recruiting effort as it relates to defensemen, as it relates to everybody, but as it relates to defensemen specifically, size is of paramount importance in Major League Lacrosse. Jason Noble doesn't necessarily fit that bill, but he makes up for it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, he's tough, and Cottle will always go out after the tough guys. I mean, we'll see what happens with them, but as far as Florida goes, like, that when they trade guys, they know that they're kind of behind the gun. They're only gonna get like 75 cents to the dollar, 50 cents to the dollar, because they are so far away from the rest of the teams. I mean, less so than Denver, I think, but it's still a consideration when they have all these Canadian guys that want to play this year because they want to get ready for Worlds, and, you know, they can't always fly to Florida all the time at the drop of a hat.
What did you think of Kevin Crowley?
I thought he looked kind of sluggish, if I'm honest. Like, I still think he's great. I think when you look at the scoring columns and you're like, oh, Kevin Crowley was the MVP and the Offensive Player of the Year last year, where is he? You know, and in this game, he was 1-3, but he could have had a couple more goals. I mean, the thing drives me crazy about guys in the league, not Crowley specifically, but like offenses in the league, is why are you shooting low on Galloway? Like, what are you doing? Like, do you not have scouting reports? Is that what's going on? It makes me so mad. When, I mean, listen, Galloway's a good goalie. I don't want to take anything away from him, but he drops on everything, and he makes the majority of his saves low. He's not a guy that pops up and makes a save. He's a dropper, you know, and that's fine. Like, that's a style of play, but teams with, like, Florida was just, pardon the pun, launching balls at the five hole on Galloway all day long. I mean, all day long, and, It didn't work out for him in that way. And then when it was like, oh, well, we'll have to take shots from farther out, they weren't moving the location. We're not changing the planes. I think that he could have had a lot more. He's definitely still a great player. I'm not saying he's a bad player at all. I mean, he had 4 points in an MLO game. He's great, but the offense is not flowing through him, and he is not getting nearly as much touches as he did last year on the Nationals.
Well, and I think that Casey Powell's presence is an obvious reason for that. And let me just make one more point, and then we got to move on to the next game.
Sure.
So I'm a big fan of balance and symmetry as it relates to playing offense in lacrosse. You know, whereas in basketball, where you have five guys, you're never going to be, like, you know, perfectly balanced. I think that in lacrosse, there's a lot of value in trying to attain that. And it, and typically, I would like to see offenses, you know, kind of start from or form their identity from either really solid righty-lefty balance or really, really solid from, you know, ability to dodge righty-lefty up top, ability to dodge righty-lefty from behind. And I think that, I mean, this isn't like groundbreaking type stuff. You know, I thought that that was one of the main assets that Loyola had in 2012, was that Lusby and Sawyer were very complementary pieces on opposite side of the offense. And I thought that Virginia had that early this year with Pinnell and Cochran. You know, and I thought that, conversely, in terms of being able to dodge from up top and behind, you know, I thought that, Duke actually added a little bit of an additional element when Kyle Keenan was able to dodge lefty from behind, and then they had Jordan Wolf going righty from behind to complement, you know, Jones and Class from up top. This is all by way of saying that I think that Casey and Crowley could potentially move toward complementing each other in very much of a mirrored type of fashion from X and from up top. And I know that there are probably going to be some other launch tweaks, you know, particularly as it relates to what I guess Manly may have kind of exposed about how to play Casey this week, but maybe one of the best ways to complement that or best ways to counteract that is to get Kevin Crowley really operating from up top, get defenses paying attention to him, get early slides, and then Casey's a little bit freer to operate from X and primarily feed the ball, because it's when he's feeding well that he's never going to draw a slide. And if you're not sliding Casey Powell, he's going to be able to score
right.
2-3 times a game.
And I think, you know, like you said, Manly, the blueprint to defend Casey is beat the crap out of Casey.
Which, right now. And
he's
a great of stall time type player. So I'm sure that, you know, he'll be a little bit more prepared for that approach next week and maybe it won't work as well. But, let's move on, because there were, you know, three other interesting games. I want to talk about the other one that wasn't really close late, and that is Ohio 15, Chesapeake 11 at Navy Marine Corps Stadium on Saturday night. And, you know, definitely a interesting result. The Machine now moved to 2-3. Their offense continues to be the part of their team that is most reliable. And I don't know. I mean, I guess the easiest way to frame this is – should we be getting excited about the Machine? Because I know that I am. I, like, want to watch every single one of their games. But is that a rational conclusion to have come to, or am I, you know, out of my mind?
I mean, I tell you what, we talked to Bear on the call, and I was just like, what do you do for Man Up? Because it looks like the simplest 3-3 with, like, a backside switch Man Up I've ever seen, and they have pretty, pretty goals and pretty finishers on that. And he's like, I mean, I don't have to game plan too much. He's like, look at these guys. You know, like, he's got Stamick on the right block. He's got Schuss coming across, up top, just shooting BBs whenever he gets the ball and whenever he's open. I mean, they are very exciting to watch on offense. That is 1000% accurate. I think the rest of the time, the other team has to play not necessarily down, but if the other team lets them carry the ball across half, they look even better than they probably should. Cause I think they have a lot of guys that run with their head down. And if you play against, once teams figure that out and start getting, you know, hard rides and stuff, like if a lot of the older teams don't even do it because a lot of the older guys are just like, I'm not riding, like whatever. I don't feel like doing it. But they play a team that does that, they're going to be in trouble. But no one's really done that to them. They've just kind of shot themselves in the foot in some of these games where they've been up and not pushed the tempo at the right time or not made the right decision at the right time. But they're on the way for sure. Like, they have learned from their losses, and they're definitely a team that gets better every time I watch them.
And then on the flip side, the typical sports talk radio question, Pan and Potent time for the Chesapeake Bayhawks?
Yeah, it doesn't look good. I mean, the thing is, they are really, 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 really hurt. I mean, I have a list of guys that aren't necessarily out there that are hurt. You know, there are a lot of guys that are playing hurt on that team. Obviously Spallina's out, but I mean, you know, Burns is out with a serious injury. I don't know why he's not on IR. Hunt's coming back this week. Walter's coming back this week, but is that enough? You know, Poyon's not going to play. Poyon has a concussion from this game. He's not playing. So there's a lot of, you know, you could point the finger at any number of things, but really it's the mentality to win and the mentality to make simple plays that lead to great goals is just not there. And it hasn't been there all year. And that's their problem. And Pizer's on IR as well. He got hurt in this game too. I've talked to officials in the Bayhawks and they're like, yeah, we can't make it through a game with 19 guys. They haven't made it through one game without losing a guy. I mean, you can say that's an excuse. You can say that's whatever, but I mean, it's hard to win in the MLL when you're having a 19 man roster and you lose a guy and he's not the backup goalie. The backup goalie takes a slot. The Fogo takes a slot. You lose an O mid and you're all of a sudden you're down. You lose a D mid. All of a sudden somebody gets caught out. And in this game, it was McCready's. Now I love McCready's. I think he's an awesome player. He's so much fun to watch, but he can't play defense. Can't play midfield defense on a top guy in the MLL. It's just not going to happen. And, he got stuck on defense. I think I counted seven times, the whole game. And he got scored on in transition a couple times and it's just not a good look for them. They need to batten down the hatches and get some goals because they frankly just look bad.
Well, let's go ahead and talk to a member of the Ohio Machine, him being Marcus Ullman.
Sounds good.
And the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast continues with Ohio Machine attackman Marcus Ullman, whose team just defeated the Chesapeake Bayhawks 15-11 last week to advance to 2-3 on the season, have a two-game homestand on the horizon. And you know, Marcus, as you guys kind of come together as a team is probably the best way to put it. What are your thoughts just on how much different this year is to last year in terms of the number, the versatility of the weapons, and the different process by which you guys are kind of building chemistry?
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, obviously this franchise is in its third year. And you know, kind of a theme we talked about in training camp was, you know, we're not the new kids on the block anymore. You know, there's no excuse not to, you know, be really competitive in this league. And, you know, obviously, you know, you have to start with the additions of Peter and Kyle, Peter Baum and Kyle Harrison, obviously at the midfield. You know, this is a midfield oriented league. And last year, you know, at times I was playing up at the midfield where, you know, I'm not as naturally comfortable and we just didn't have the pop there last year that, you know, we needed as a team to be successful. And I think anybody involved in this team would admit that. I think that, you know, the other thing is, you know, our rookies last year are continuing to blossom into, you know, solid sophomores. And you look at guys like, Logan Shush, and two guys that really won't get a lot of recognition, but I think are vital to our success are Dominique Alexander and Jake Bernhardt at the defensive midfield position. I think they've, you know, really attacked, their conditioning and their strength. And they, you know, they seem to be playing at a very high level. And then another guy like Kevin Cooper, who's, you know, joined our team as kind of that third or fourth midfield guy. So a lot of things. You know, we're still relatively young, but, you know, I think a couple pieces have been put together and, you know, we're feeling pretty confident right now.
Marcus, this year you guys have been in basically every game. You've lost your three games by a combined total of four goals. I believe that's right.
Yeah.
Right. How has that kind of been compared to last year? Obviously the experience is better, but, you being more prominently featured at attack, how much has that impacted everything?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I definitely feel, comfortable down there and, you know, Steele and Logan and myself are still trying to gain that chemistry and you know, get comfortable playing with one another. You know, I think the close losses thing, you know, it's still a process and we're trying to figure out, you know, how to win those games. We think that we're going to be in every single game this season. You know, it's going to be whether or not you make those, you know, two or three plays in the fourth quarter, or, you know, you don't give up that four goal run at the end of the third quarter. So those little things, you know, we're still continuing to work out and, you know, moving forward. You know, it started, I think, Saturday night. I think that was the first, you know, kind of 60-minute complete game that we played as a team. And, you know, we're going to try to keep that momentum rolling tomorrow night against a good Boston team.
Marcus, you know, you mentioned that it's a midfielders league, and I think that's something that a lot of people have known for a long time. Another thing that's kind of like maybe stacked against your success a little bit, in terms of like maybe the thought of how good you could have been at this point last year, is that you're not very big. So that, you know, those two things being out on the table. But the reason that I don't buy into that is there are two things that you do that can be successful or important in the league that not a lot of attackmen do. The first is ride, and the second is help move the ball. I was told by a guy earlier this week that the Ohio Machine moved the ball better than any team in the MLL this year other than the Denver Outlaws. What are your thoughts on riding, and what are your thoughts on your offense's ball movement, particularly when the defense knows where the ball is?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the first piece with riding, I think, you know, coming into training camp this year, you know, talking with Steele and Logan, and another guy who was a piece of that was Eric Crum, who was an addition to our team. Just taking that attitude of, you know, just playing 60 minutes. I think, you know, it was almost crazy to me to think that, you know, every attackman wasn't riding to the midfield line, you know, every possession. That's just something that's kind of been ingrained in me, you know, since I picked up a stick. And that is, you know, if you want to be a really good attackman, you're going to ride, you know, every chance you get, and you're going to pick up ground balls. So those are just things that, you know, I pride myself on is trying to be a complete player, and a complete attackman as well. And then, you know, just the motion piece, you know, there's one ball, at the offensive end. And, you know, no matter if you put, you know, six four-time winners out there or six, you know, guys that played Division III, the team that, you know, works well the best and moves the best and, develops that chemistry is going to be successful. You know, it's not realistic to think that each offensive player is going to score 3 or 4 points a game. While, you know, ideally that would be the case, you know, there's going to be games where, you know, you only get maybe 3 or 4 looks at the cage, and, you know, you've got to convert on one or two of those, and then hopefully you're setting up other guys to score. So I think that just goes back, I guess, with me personally, just from, you know, my days of playing college lacrosse, and, you know, if there's a guy open, you move it to him. You know, the guy who initiates the offense isn't always going to be the guy that's scoring. So that's just something that, you know, you have to buy into, and I think our team is continuing to do that, and we're going to look to build off that moving forward.
Marcus, I got to ask about the two-pointer last week. I was watching the game live, and the whole time I find myself screaming at the TV, "He's still got the ball. He's still got the ball. Oh my God, he's going to shoot the ball." And then you shot it. And I'm not going to lie, I love Kip, but I laughed like really hard. Kind of talk me through that whole play.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I believe we were man up and we had just won the faceoff. And I kind of just came up towards the midfield line to get the ball. And Steele and I, to be honest, Steele Stanwyck, you have to give a lot of credit to him, because if you don't carry the fake out, then, you know, you're never going to score on a hidden ball trick. So, you know, him and I during practice and during shoot around, we're always messing around with, you know, kind of cool moves and stuff like that. You know, there's another type of move that we haven't, you know, broken out during a game yet that we're still trying to work on in practice, but, you know, that's a different story. So anyways, you know, just saw Steele up there and you know, tried to turn my back towards the goal when I did the flip, so that obviously, you know, Kip wouldn't see. And it's one of those things where, you know, like I said, you practice it 100 times and, you know, it never works, and you know, usually someone's able to point it out. And when I turned, I kind of took one hand off my stick, just, you know, to simulate as if I was jogging and I didn't have the ball. And just kind of out of the corner of my eye, looked at the goal, and I noticed the guys you know, the defensemen were looking at me. I think it was Jesse Bernhardt and Michael Evans were kind of like looking up at me, but I saw Kip was turning and following Steele down the side of the field. So, truthfully, you know, just had a split second to kind of make that decision as I was about, you know, 30 yards away from the goal. You know, saw, you know, a pretty big open net, and let one rip. And, you know, I was fortunate enough it went in. And I think if you kind of turn the volume up on the speakers, you can hear us, you know, start almost laugh. Like we're all like, holy crap, that was hysterical, as it went in. So it was pretty cool play. And, you know, it was a pretty big momentum shifter in the game, you know, going from down one to up one. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, it was a fun play.
That legitimately, if that's like a season turning moment, that's going to be like, that's going to be on some like highlight reels and stuff. It's going to be on highlight reels anyway. That's pretty awesome. This might be the toughest question I've ever asked you. Does anybody in Major League Lacrosse like diving more than you?
Oh man. I don't know. I seem to be like that guy right now, that kamikaze type backhand diver. I know Ryan Young is a big fan of it as well, from Charlotte. You know, we kind of have similar games around the crease. And you know, I think that just on another, I guess, topic, that backhand move seems to be like all the rage now in lacrosse between, you know, Lyle Thompson and Joey Sankey and, you know, guys doing it all over the place. So, it's pretty cool. I'm just, you know, any way I can score, I'll do it. So if that, you know, means diving around the goal, I'm all for that.
You're hitting Boston, your second home game of the year, coming up this week. Who do you think's going to be on you and why? I mean, they got a bunch of bruisers. It's, packing extra elbow pads for that one.
Yeah, definitely. You know, their defense is obviously playing pretty well, and I think, you know, it starts with their goalie. You know, Jordan Burke's definitely having, I think, one of the best seasons of his career here. And then, you know, personnel-wise, you know, I'm not sure. I think it could be Mitch Belisle, who's, you know, just a stout defenseman, just really solid. You know, he may not take the ball away from you, but, you know, you're going to be hard-pressed to get by him. And then, you know, other than that, just talking general Boston, you know, obviously you have to be on the lookout for Scott Ratliff pushing transition. He's, you know, you've got to treat him as a short stick. So, you know, one of our keys usually offensively is to make sure that we're taking good shots where, you know, Burke can't catch them easily and start transition going the other way. So, you know, not too sure about personnel wise, but, you know, we're just going to stick to our philosophies offensively and try to get good shots on cage.
Marcus, we'll get you out of here on this one. You know, obviously it's the MLL podcast, but at the same time, we'd be remiss not to ask, where's your head at regarding the world team? As, you know, everything kind of moves towards a crescendo, and there, you know, still five or so cuts lingering heading into Denver.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of been on the back burner, to be honest, a little bit. Obviously, we still have our training regiment that we're sent by Coach Jay Dyer. And, yeah, but, you know, with June getting underway, it's definitely becoming more and more to the forefront of my thinking and excitement. I was actually talking to somebody the other day, and I really think this All-Star game is going to be a little bit different than the usual MLL All-Star game. I think it's going to be guys really competing from that opening whistle until the end. Obviously, you know, from my standpoint as a part of Team USA, you know, we want to start getting a winning mentality going into the World Games. And I don't think it would look good for us to, you know, go out and lose to, you know, a group of very talented lacrosse players. And then on the other hand, you have guys who probably feel slighted that they aren't on Team USA. So it's going to be really competitive. At least that's, you know, my mindset going into it. I don't think it's going to be the you don't wear elbow pads type of game and you kind of jog around. I think it's going to be, you know, very fast and physical as well.
Marcus, you're the man. We appreciate your time. Good luck this weekend, and we'll talk again soon, bud.
Sounds good. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
One of the coolest parts about this podcast, Kyle, I think, is just the way in which we can, I don't know, have a meandering type conversation with, some of the either biggest or burgeoning stars in the league. And, the opportunity to do that with Marcus Holman is always appreciated. He's just a fun kid to talk to, no doubt about it.
He's pretty laid back. Sometimes these guys get on there and they're a little high strung, but he's really good.
Well, yeah, I mean, how can you not be when you're fielding questions from the Kyle Devitt?
Yeah, I try to be nicer in my old age, but, people get upset.
We got two games to get to from this weekend. They were actually the two closest games, so, there are probably folks out there who are criticizing us for not starting with them. But New York beat Boston 11-10 in the debut game of last weekend, week five. And then in the nightcap, Denver beat Charlotte 13-11. So starting with the first one, maybe the biggest highlight coming out of the Lizards' win over the Cannons was a collision at midfield between Max Seabold and Paul Rabil that led to a Rabil goal. Also led to pretty significant bruises from both guys. What are your takeaways from this one?
That was definitely the truck stick button right there, watching the game. But I think both these teams play ugly and play even uglier when they play against each other. And they like to keep the ball in their end. They don't like to concede transition. There wasn't a ton of transition in the game. I think the question coming out of the game is you heard Holman talk about it earlier. Jordan Burke, amazing season so far. Definitely outplayed Drew Adams. Drew Adams still in the Team USA picture. Jordan Burke never in it. I think the injury last year, to Burke, his thumb and all that, I think that really affected him a lot more than maybe people realized. And actually, we talked to, Tucker on the conference call and he brought that up. He's like, listen, Jordan would never say that, but Tucker was like, I think that definitely affected him. And you can see now what he can do fully healthy, and he is one of the best, if not the best, goalie in the league right now.
And then switching gears to Mile High, you said – you basically laid it down like almost a guarantee that the Outlaws were going to beat the Hounds, and they did, and they got a two-goal win. But it was closer – it was closer than your comments made me feel like you expected it to be. Did I misread your comments?
No, it was definitely closer, but I mean, again, Denver scored six goals in the first quarter. And then they were just like, yeah, we're good. We're fine. And that's kind of if you have a problem with Denver, that's your problem, is that they don't go at that clip the whole game. They can. And if they ever decide to actually do that all game, they are going to blow people out. And I thought they would do that against Charlotte this game, but give Charlotte credit. They tossed in a bunch of rookies. They played pretty well. I think that, guys like Ward had 4 points at a goal and 3 assists. But, if you watched every possession he had, he was surprised a lot when he was in the corner. When you're in the corner in the NCAA, the very corner of the field on the offensive side, you're not going to have a defenseman running out to check you. In the MLL, they will come out and check you if they think that you can't handle it. And he got the ball taken away from him a couple times because of that. And once he adjusted, he did a lot better. I think it happened to Hawes once or twice as well, where he didn't expect to get bumped where he got bumped. And he's like, wow, I'm really far away from the net and there's no one to pass to. I need to keep running. I think playing Fowler was interesting. I know that you and I had a conversation about that where you didn't think he would play. And I told you he played and you're like, what? Thought he was going to, not play in the MLS here, but he didn't do that great. Didn't do poor. I mean,
It's an adjustment. You don't.
3-for-11. It's his first game. You can't really take anything out of it. And they weren't winning faceoffs anyway. A-Train was on his game and that was that.
Anything else from either of these two games that are important before we jump into this week's action?
I mean, Eric Law still is just nasty. Just a nasty, turned his guy inside out, scored right around him. You know, he scored a great goal. He's an exceptional player to watch. He's just one of those players that doesn't make a lot of mistakes. You know, there are players that are spectacular. You know, Danowski is a spectacular player when he's on. He made a ton of mistakes in this game. He cost Charlotte the game. He took a shot that is my barometer for worst shot of all time is the playoffs in 2012 or 2010. Brad Ross taking like a 40 footer in like, then there's 50 seconds left on the clock to try and beat the Bayhawks when they're only down one. That in my mind was the worst shot of all time until this game where Danowski did the exact same thing with two guys on and cost him the game.
Well, it is a regular season game, not
a postseason. I know, and it was not as bad. I understand, but it was still, and I like Brad Ross. I've met Brad Ross several times. He's an excellent gentleman, but we're talking just random regular plays, and that's a play that costs you the game. And the end of this game was strange because the last 5 minutes was Rock'em Sock'em Robots at the half line. Like it was just beating on each other. Neither team touched the ball inside the 2-point line for at least 3.5 minutes. And then when they had it, they chucked it away or they took a bad shot and that was it. I mean, it was tense for sure. And I think that made it seem like the game was really close, but I mean, the Hounds were only up for like 30 seconds, something like that. So it in the entire game. So I can see how it would look tight, but I think Denver had it in hand. They just took their foot off the gas and made it look a little closer.
Okay, I'll let that go. I'll buy that, I suppose. You know, we're cutting this close continuously by recording our weekly podcast only moments before the first game of the week that we were recording prior to with the Chesapeake Bayhawks taking on the Rochester Rattlers this evening, going head-to-head against Game 1 of the NBA Finals, which got to feel good about if you're commissioner of the MLL. Am I wrong?
Oh, yeah. It's a great move.
But that being said, I mean, you know, you were obviously very excited to see the Rattlers play last week. If, you know, what's your level of excitement heading into this game?
Even more excited. I didn't think it was possible. I'm even more excited. Talking to Sudo during the week, he's such like a funny guy to talk to on the podcast because one of the things that I knew him for is that he like flipped out on all of us about the Mark Millen thing last year and then was like really combative the rest of the year. And then he comes back this year and he's like funny and he's like, he's coaching this week. He was coaching gym class while he was on the phone with us. And like there was a kid, like you could hear stuff going on in the background. He goes, hey, in the middle of, he's answering a question. He goes, hey, throw the ball higher, throw it higher. And he comes back like he never missed anything. It was great. He's a character. I love it. And his teams make like such tiny adjustments and they play simple lacrosse. You know, I get the feeling like every huddle, Sudo's like, all right, you're going to score this play. Next play, you're going to score. We're going to move the ball around. You're going to go. And when we interview him on the conference, the coaches call every week, he kind of has the same mentality where he's like, well, we just want guys to go where they're comfortable and we just tell them to go. And if they don't get it, we tell them you're going to get it next time. I like that. I think that's cool. People think that might be too simplistic, but like he's playing to his guys' strengths and going against Chesapeake, who is really just beat up all over the place. So many guys are out for this game against that, against Rochester. But they're going to have Joe Walters. They're going to have, Ben Hunt coming off the injured list. It's more about who they are going to have than who they're not going to have, but they're not going to have a ton of guys. And a lot of them are on the defensive end of the ball and defensive midfield. And we're going to see what Chesapeake's made of. And I don't know if this is a favorable game for them. I really don't. I mean, it's not like Rochester cares if they play in front of 100 people because they don't, because they do it every week. You know, Chesapeake's not going to have a crowd to feed off of. They're going to have to do it themselves. And I think the motivation has to be high, or you're going to ask some even more questions if this is, you know, if Chesapeake drops to 1-5.
Next one up tomorrow night, Boston, Ohio. We just talked to Marcus Holman. He tried to figure out who he thought was going to be playing him, told him to wear an extra set of elbow pads. What are your thoughts on this one?
I think it might be Belisle unless they put Belisle on Stanwyck. You know, he was right about Ratliff and not taking easy shots on Burke because Burke will key transition. You know, Boston was in that game. You know, there was like 9 lead changes in that New York Boston game and they were, you know, in it. They were at the end ready to win it and they just couldn't get the last goal to fall for them to tie it, send it to overtime. And that's how it goes sometimes. I think Boston is so much improved still. I don't care if they're 2-3. You know, they look good. It's a team that looks good and plays a style. They're committing to what is going to win them games with the personnel that they have. And that's not something they've done for a while. It's probably since they won the championship. I think Rabel leading the league in assists is a good story, but it's, you know, the other guys around him are the guys that are going to win games. You know, Kevin Buchanan, Will Manny stepping up every other game with like 4 points. You know, he's got to play well for them to win. Boyle has to play well for them to win. But I think against Ohio, it's going to be tough because Ohio is young and fast and Boston is not young and not fast. And especially in transition.
I'm looking forward to, I'm going to figure out a way to watch this game. And I'm looking forward to talking about this one next weekend for the two reasons that you just explained. The first is the energy level, the dichotomy of the energy and speed level. And then the second is, you know, this lingering belief of like, is it okay to jump on board of Ohio? I wouldn't be stunned if Ohio gets blown out of this game. I don't know whether or not you would be, but if they are blown out and they fall to 2-4, what does that mean? And on the flip side, if they win, obviously, what does that mean? You know, are they a playoff-level team? So we'll see. Moving on, New York heading down to sunny Florida, 5:30 game on Saturday. What are your thoughts on the launch, trying to get back on the winning track?
I think Florida has a lot of questions to answer defensively. And I don't think, you know, I put some heat on Queener in my column this week and when we talked about it earlier, but I don't think it was all his fault. I think the game plan was not smart and the changes were not made in time for Florida to get back in that game and Rochester just ran wild, ran amok and put him away. I think New York has the capacity to do so, but I mean, New York with all these stars, you know, you got Strebel, Marasco, all these kind of periphery players that could, you know, DiNapoli that could get 2-3, 1-2-3-4 goals, couple assists every game, aren't getting touches because Pennell, Crotty, and Seabold are on the field. And Pennell, Crotty, and Seabold have taken almost 50 shots in the last 2 games. So if you look at all those numbers, there aren't any more shots for other guys to take. And if Florida figures that out and lets one of those 3 guys get his points, manages to shut down one or the other, it could be a long day for New York, but I think they're going to put Dirk in on Pennell, try and make Crotty and Seabold beat him, try to make distance shots beat him, and I think it's going to come down to Queener's play in the net as to whether or not Florida has a chance.
And then Denver and Charlotte doing one of those things that the NLL does all the time, which is where you play, they do it more on the same weekend. So you play, you know, like Calgary plays in Colorado on Friday night and then flip-flopping Calgary on Saturday. So the Outlaws are now heading to Memorial. Is being at sea level worth 2 goals for the Hounds?
It could be, but I think this is the week that Curtis Dixon is making his MLL debut, his long-awaited MLL debut. I think they've had his rights for 4 years. Is that right? 3 years? 4 years?
3 years. I believe it was part of the Matthews deal that sent him to the Lizards, right? Or not part of the deal, but I feel like they're, oh no, that was Greer that they were gonna fill him in with.
But,
he legitimately, Curtis Dixon's never played an MLL game?
He's never played an MLL game. It's shocking because when I write MLL previews, I'm like, wow, Curtis Dixon might play this year. Cool. And then he never plays.
I would have guessed that he had at least like 25 MLL points.
No, he's never played.
That's shocking to me.
It's crazy. He actually tweeted this week that it was his debut and he was excited and, he was on the Roughnecks when they lost the, NLL, right?
Yes.
I'm not a big NLL guy.
No, that is correct. He was on that team and they did not win.
Yeah. He tweeted something about being upset that he didn't win and now he gets to play with the Outlaws. So that's good. you know, I hope he plays and does well. And, I'm looking forward to where he's going to play. I actually asked, BJ on the call where he thought he would play. And he said, listen, the Canadian guys are used to getting on and off and playing just in the settled offense. I expect him to kind of slot into that slasher role where he might stay on if he's really low on the field or low on the ball. He might be the first guy off the field. We don't know yet, but, you know, he said they were planning on using him. So that'll be fun.
Anything else for this week?
Not really. I'm just, you know, excited for the coming week. I mean, we got Chesapeake Rochester in 2 hours. So pretty excited to watch that. Get a game under the belt and, go into the weekend fresh, ready to watch the rest of the games, write another column and do it all over again.
There you go, buddy. Thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks, man. Inside the Cross Podcast.